There's three sides to every story. There's my side, your side, and the truth.
Which Kelly are you?
Edward. People call me Ned.
I photograph what my conscience asks me to.
Ned, they want to have him in the movie!
Mad Max 2. It's my kind of movie.
Shut up! Shut up!
Your friend can't come backstage.
Oh, he's disabled. I'm his carer.
You're blind.
He's an equal opportunity employer.
The kids who are sick cannot do the hip-hop anymore.
My name is Andrew Pierce, and this is a podcast that takes a look at Australian films, Australian culture, and everything in between. This podcast is recorded in the lands of the Whadjuk people of Perth region, and I pay respects to the elders both past, present, and emerging. On this particular episode, I catch up with filmmakers Addison Heath and Jasmine Jacoupi, whose latest film, My Cherry Pie, is going to be screening on the online festival A Night of Horror, which is launching this week in October. I'm going to stick all the details in the show notes below, but this is a film festival for all those horror-loving fans out there. This is the festival that you really need to check out and see. There is a whole bunch of underground films and lesser-known horror films that are on there that are really worth your time. And one of the films, I mean, long-time listeners of the show will know that I love talking about Australian films, and My Cherry Pie is a lovely little Australian film that actually really wonderfully plays in the horror genre, playing with a whole bunch of different horror tropes, which you'll hear about, we talk in this particular interview in a moment, and I tell you what, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the visual style, I enjoyed the score, the performances are wonderful as well. Most importantly, I think the script is really great. Addison Heath's script is great too. It's very, very pitch black comedy here. Quite a dark film in a lot of ways, but the comedy is really, really spot on. And the costume design, excellent as well. Really enjoyed that too. It is a bit of a treat to watch this particular film, and I really enjoyed it. And as you listen in this particular interview, you'll find out from both Addison and Jasmine what their suggestions are for those who are going to be watching this film at home. What's the best setup for you to watch this film at home? Right, that's enough from me. You have a nice slice of what My Cherry Pie is all about in this interview with Addison and Jasmine. Because it's an audio podcast, if you could both introduce yourselves for the listeners, would be fantastic.
Okay. Total frog in the throat. So I'm still there. I'm Jasmine Jacoupi, co-director of My Cherry Pie, along with...
I'm Addison Heath. I'm the co-director and writer of My Cherry Pie.
Congratulations on the film, guys. It's really good. It's,
thank you.
Yeah, it's a nice dive into, a whole bunch of different horror genres in a lot of ways. I guess I want to jump into that to start off with. The blend of literally everything, like 70s aesthetic, the giallo aesthetic, there's a whole bunch of brutal violence, bleak humor, and things like that. Yeah. Where did the idea come from? Was it to kind of play with these different genres of horror?
Definitely. That was sort of the thing, was how can we make a movie that from the outset we went into it wanting to make a slasher movie, but we could throw in sort of all those elements into a blender and see what we come up with. Because I guess sort of where it started was there's a film from 1974 that was on the Video Nasties list called Axe. It's also called Lisa in some countries. And I hired Dylan Heath, who plays the... plays Jack in the film. He's one of the main criminals in the film. We grew up together watching movies, and we hired a movie on VHS called California Axe Massacre. That's what it was called for at my video store, at least. And I remember we hired it being big fans of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We were like, this movie is... Like, when I first saw it as a kid, I was like, this movie's nothing like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This is terrible. and then it was a film that when I watched it again, I was like, oh, hang on, there's like It's actually a really cool plot going on here, which is sort of a similar thing where it's basically a group of criminals are forced to flee the city and they find themselves in an unknown sort of, you know, a horror-centric location. So it almost starts as like a 70s crime film and turns into a horror film. So I was like, well, I love that idea. And I haven't really seen that done in Australia, especially something that we could do something that could be a nod to like 80s exploitation sort of crime cinema. And then it gets interrupted by, you know, an early 80s slasher movie. That's kind of where the original idea came from.
Yeah, and I think like we're no strangers to like a genre mashup. So I think that, you know, we love so many different elements of film and we just think that it's a new way to kind of combine different things to get different results. And so definitely the interruption was like a really important kickoff for us.
Totally. And the other thing being as well that like in the original script for My Cherry Pie, it was the criminal shop just at a farmhouse. You know, we'd written it as a farmhouse because we had no idea we could get that location.
Yeah.
That came after, and then when we visited the location, we're like, oh my god, like I just started rewriting, you know, basically that entire part onward, because I was like, this feels like something from like a Dario Argento movie or a Lucio Fulci movie. Like, this is going to be cool if we just blow this out in red lights and green lights and give it this like, you know, otherworldly sort of, like at night we knew that place could look like a giallo nightmare, so we just thought, well, that's totally the style that we'll lean into.
Yeah, and it's a vast contrast too because we utilize a lot of like grimy elements for the crime component. So yeah, it's a nice kind of pairing.
Yeah, it's cool to do the sort of neons and try to make that stuff look like, yeah, like a beautiful nightmare the way, yeah, the giallo films of the 70s would evoke.
Yeah. I want to talk about the costume of the killer as well, because that kind of skews towards the whole giallo aspect too. It's this, you know, this brilliant kind of Halloweenish costume. Where did the design come from? Where was the idea for that for?
Well, we were really fortunate enough to work with costume designer Noelle.
Yep.
And she is just amazing to work with.
Her and James. We had two people that basically helped us design that costume. In the script, again, it started as something much smaller, and then when we got to the hospital, we started realizing, well, that would be cool. And then the plague doctor aesthetic worked into it being an old hospital. So we thought that would be cool.
James comes into play in terms of like the mask quite heavily. Mm. So he is a mask maker, leather worker.
Yeah.
From Melbourne, and yeah, so we wanted to incorporate both of their skills that they have, and they work together really well to create this character. So it was really fun for us to like have a vague idea, but then really watch it take shape in terms of like location influences and both Noelle and James' kind of style.
And really, like you said, the giallo aesthetic being the black leather gloves, which is a really cool, that's a boxing. The wide brim hat is sort of a box that you tick with that reminds me of films, and not even just giallo films, like even some of those early 80s slasher movies, like a film called Pieces was a big influence for us.
That's what I was thinking of as well. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably, to be honest with you, like Motel Hell, Pieces, and kind of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 were the biggest influences on us for this film. So we wanted to, and definitely the killer's aesthetic in Pieces was hugely influential. So, yeah.
Yeah. With all of that in mind, one of the things which I'm really impressed by, because, you know, I watch a lot of films and you see a lot of films that are inspired by other films and you go, all right, well, it's clear that you're wearing those inspirations on your sleeve, but where's your personality coming through? But with My Cherry Pie, it's like, all of those inspirations are there, and it's clear, and it's great to kind of play in that genre and, you know, see all of those inspirations there from the different genres. But the personality of both of you is so clear in the script and in the direction and in the performances that are drawn out. How do you find that balance? How do you manage to straddle that line comfortably?
Well, I mean, as far as the writing goes, I've been fortunate to work. Like, I've worked on, we've made a lot of films together. I've worked on other films. So I've been able to sort of go through genres a little bit, and that's really how I was able to sort of, I feel like I was able to find my writing voice a lot on those other films. And then, so when it comes to, you know, like tackling a new genre, like the slasher giallo thing, it's just like, it just sort of, that voice kind of comes naturally in a lot of ways. Like I pretty much always want things to be as funny as they can be.
Yeah.
So
I think that's where a lot of personality comes
through. Is it, and I just think that me and Jasmine love Australian comedy and the sort of intricacies of Australian dialogue that can be just funny and like and
because this film was a throwback as well to, you know, 1981 was a huge influence for us in terms of dialogue and things like that. That was like added in to that, you know, slang of the times, and I find that just Australian slang itself is a form of humor, so it's like really kind of,
and also a lot of films of that era as well, like they're like, political correctness didn't exist at that point, so we never had to be too concerned about, oh, is this going to upset people? Because it's like, well, but all of those films would now, you know? So, like, we didn't get it. Felt like, it felt like open border a little bit as far as not having to be too concerned about offending anybody, because it's like, that's sort of par for the course with this type of film. So,
But the thing I like about that is that, you know, the characters are relatively unlikable. We like them, you know, we enjoy spending time with them, but they're all pricks or they're all, you know, killers or they're all evil people. So it makes sense that they would say and do the things that they do. And it gives you a bit of that free rein to be able to do those, I guess, un-PC things. Yeah.
100%. I mean, the thing that we talked about as well is like, you know, like they, like I remember reading in like screenwriters books and things like that when I was studying years ago, like things like, you know, the best stories are good versus evil, and they'll say things like that. It's like, we want to take a movie that was bad versus evil.
Yeah.
They're like, we start you off with bad, and then you meet something much sicker and darker the further you get into the film. So that was kind of enough. Yeah, that also puts you in a position of like, you can have so much fun with the writing of it because you're not trying to manipulate an audience into like rooting for these guys. These guys are scumbags.
Yeah.
And we get to, and that can be, that just, I think that means that as an audience, I think you can root for the movie more than you can for the characters. And that's sort of what we wanted to try to do.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the like fun element that we wanted to bring into as a spectator is like, it's kind of like, you know, who are you rooting for? Yeah. You find yourself, you know, rooting for.
Yeah. And if we can manage to flip you and have you actually go, oh, now I kind of want these guys, you know, like that's a really cool place to try to put an audience as well. It's interesting to like show characters doing the worst things to begin with, and can we flip that around and by the end of it actually have you wanting them to come through? You know, that can be trickier it's like a wire walk of screenwriting. It's like, can we do this without pushing it too far into one or the other? Which is, that's just having fun writing it and making it. You know?
Yeah.
But how do you, like, what kind of direction do you give the actors to ensure that they're meeting that script at that level as well? I mean, it's obviously it's on the page, but to ensure that they're delivering that kind of heightened comedy aspect of the characters there, how do you, what kind of directions do you give them?
Well, we were lucky enough to, like, have a lot of kind of Zoom rehearsals and things like that. So we were able to kind of, particularly with the criminals, like we would kind of separate, I guess, the elements of the film and work them separately.
Mm.
So we would work with the main three criminals of the film and really get that natural banter, that vibe that there is a history with those characters. Mm. So once we had that base, it was really kind of introducing them together.
It also helps as well that those three actors have known each other for so long that they do have a real friendship, that they went into the film already friends, already had worked together on other shorts and little things, and like we were friends with all of them. So it was a thing that when they got the script, it didn't take that much pushing with them to get them in the right place. I mean, the guy that was the Glenn Maynard, who plays Edwin Crow, plays the like the Uncle Ed at the hospital. He was really fun to work with. I got to write a film that he did called Chocolate, Strawberry, Vanilla in 2012. So we'd worked together heaps, and I'd known him previously. But he's that type of guy that you kind of just bring in as like, he's almost like a Nicolas Cage. Like you just bring him in and just let him go.
Yeah.
And he will give you that kind of that crazy performance. So we just tried to make sure that anyone we cast were people that we knew would come in and totally get the material.
Yeah.
So it didn't actually take that much like sort of directing gymnastics to get anybody to that. Like they knew, the criminals knew, like, we're kind of living in the same world as Chopper here. You know, this is kind of where we're going. And you know, Glenn Maynard has such a great reference for 70s and 80s horror films that he knows exactly the type of, you know.
And like, you know, Trudy Rennick isn't a big, you know, horror fanatic. So for her, it was just a matter of like, you know.
Oh, just being honest. Yeah, it was just like that. I mean, the movie's called My Cherry Pie. She plays Cherry. She's the heart of the entire movie. So we just wanted to get the best actress for that role and the person that we just knew would bring a real honesty and groundedness to, because everyone else is so big. You wanted a groundedness from her, and she was the perfect person for that. Yeah,
because like we had worked with her previously on a film called Good Girl Lola during lockdown, and that was an improv film, you know, remote kind of film, and that was really good to have that relationship build up there and to see how she works, and it was really fun as well for everyone involved to like, you know, bring what they wanted to the table. Yeah. So it was an open invitation. We're very big on collaboration. So if anyone has an idea, it's like we're going to explore it because you never know what you're going to get. So I think a lot of the actors had a lot of fun with
it. And also the thing was like Trudy came into it not knowing us as well. Like we had worked together, but it was all it was virtually done. So it wasn't the same sort of on-set thing. So she had to come into like a big group of people that knew each other and knew what they were doing. So it would have been intimidating. And then, you know, like by the end of the shoot, I won't spoil the line, but she has a line in the film that for my money is like one of the funniest lines in the film. It was totally improvised by her, made up by her on set. So I think at first she probably walked in a bit like, oh, what is going on here? And by the end of it, totally felt like part of the film family and was like on board for the humor, knew what we were doing. And like, you know, so we were really happy with her. She's amazing.
Yeah. And I like how as well you're saying that, you know, she needs to kind of be the subdued aspect of the film as opposed to all of the really over-the-top characters. But then she has her over-the-top moments later on.
Oh, yeah.
Which are like, she just, you can see on the screen that she's like absolutely relishing those moments as well. She's like, I'm able to get let loose here, which is fantastic.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, yeah, that's actually a really valid point that everyone else comes in at 11. You know what I mean? And we actually have to make her wait a little bit to have her moment of, and then it's funny stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about the look of Freddy, Sotiris, who is just so, like, he's a delight in the film. The clear decision to base him on Roger Ward there is, you know, really impressive. What was the kind of discussion? Did you say to him, right, we're going to make you look like Roger. Can you kind of meet his kind of acting level as well?
Look, I think Soteria already kind of lends himself to that look anyway, the sort of brute male look. Like when we first were doing the read-throughs and everything, obviously at the start of the movie you see Soteria and his hair is longer and stuff. So we knew that
we wanted to form it into something.
Yeah, we were like, you know, he starts coming out of prison and then we get to see him transform back into himself. And I mean, the 80s Aussie, when I think of the 80s Aussie tough guy, it's Roger Wolf. I mean, that's the quintessential Australian tough guy of that era. So, I mean, that's the best way to lean into it.
Yeah, and also the boys had a lot of fun influencing each other in terms of what stylings they should go for. Like, I would throw out some really silly ideas because I knew that if I, like, threw something out at 200%, I could rein it in to maybe...
to be workable,
what I wanted initially. So we would throw out these crazy ideas, and then after a few beers of courage, the boys were like into those characters. And it was really funny because once they, you know, got those haircuts and those trims in, they just turned into those characters. So it's really funny how, like, little details like that can really bring out more elements as well.
But, Soteria is so great, and he really knows. Like, that was the thing. Like, I wrote the film me and him had worked together and he'd had like smaller parts on our films, but I'd always been chatting to him and being like, one day I'm going to write that film when you're like the lead guy in it. It's going to be really fun. So finally it was like, we've got to do that. And yeah, this couldn't have, it was written to his strengths, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, Satiri's a really funny, competent actor. Like, he's a great actor, but he can just bring in an energy that was perfect for that role, this sort of violent energy, this, you know, and that was a lot of him bringing that in.
Yeah, yeah. And it kept everyone on their toes because when you have that to bounce off of as well, like, you don't really know which way he's going to swing this take. And it, like, you know.
And it's the same with Glenn Maynard. It's like you get a couple, I think if you place a couple of those sorts of actors in, these kind of firecracker actors that can come in and just, that they're going to bring their own stuff and it's going to be really interesting. It's kind of cool to put them in with actors that are like, you know, good with improv. You know, that was why Tim and Dylan are so, they're both actors that come from improv backgrounds. So you get them in with Satiri because you know they're just going to go with it. You know, and same with Glenn. So when you put all those people together, it just, yeah, you can sort of mold it into what we needed it to be. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is screening via the A Night at Horror Film Festival, which is has great lineup of films there. For, you know, parts of Australia, obviously Victoria, you know, going to be in lockdown. What would you recommend for people who are going to be watching this at home? What's the ideal kind of night to create around this film?
Oh, well, look, I'm not going to lie. A little bit of devil's lettuce isn't going to kill you. A little bit of devil's lettuce that this film is going to enhance it. I promise you it enhances it. A couple of beers. The main thing I would say is I'm so excited about A Night of Horror, and Bryn's done a brilliant job. Oh, yeah. And it's amazing that we're able to show the film.
Yeah.
The only thing I would really ask is try your hardest not to watch it on your phone. You know, and it's easy to do. It's an easy thing to just go, oh, I'm just cool, I'll just watch it. Like, please try to get it going on. It is a really much better film to watch on the largest screen you can with the loudest sound that you can. You know, we had a great sound design created for the film, and I think...
Great,
you know,
music as well.
Yeah, I think it's got a really cool soundtrack. You know, if you like the type of... You know, if any of the visuals have made you think, oh, that's going to be a giallo movie, just wait till you hear the music. You know, this is something where it's just try to watch it on the biggest screen you can and feel free to have a few drinks. And, you know, yeah, again, a bit of devil's lettuce is not going to be the worst thing for you.
Yeah.
With this film.
You know, we just want to have fun, and we want you to have fun watching how much fun we had making the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I watched it on, I've got a 72-inch screen, surround sound and all that at home, so, because I watch, obviously, a lot of films, review a lot of films and stuff like that, and so try and do it in the most respectful way possible, and it looks stunning on the big screen. Awesome. And that score, talk about that score for a moment, because it's really good.
Yeah.
How did you come about, like, creating it, and what kind of direction did you give for the score?
You can go ahead on this one, yeah.
I think, you know...
Is it okay if I smoke a cigarette?
Of course.
Okay, cool. Sorry. I just don't want to be that guy smoking a cigarette. You know, I feel like a bit of a dickhead doing that, but...
We can't help ourselves, sorry.
Perfectly fine.
In terms of soundtrack, we're really lucky to work with the Screaming Meanies, Jesse Brecken Thomas. We've got Pusha, which is Jacob Richards.
Yeah.
And then we also have a few other featuring artists like Tim Jason Wicks,
who's also an actor. The guy who plays Green, did some of the music. And you know,
along with Damien Vanel, who is also an actor in the film.
Yeah, plays Jimmy the Fruit's partner. And we also had the two Eastern European backpackers at the end of the movie.
Sasha
also contributed music. So it was a lot of people, but with the main people being the Screaming Meanies and Jacob Richards.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we were so, like, we were already excited to hear what these guys were going to do. They know the genre. They're fans of giallo, especially
John Carpenter.
Screaming Meanies, and the John Carpenter synth sort of waves down and stuff. So we knew that they kind of knew what we wanted, and then they just delivered, like, they kept sending me stuff and I was like, this is amazing.
And they would bounce back and forth and like sample each other's work and work it all in together. So it's like, you know, it was really interesting to see happen, because again, it's all just virtually, and then you just get these things sent to you like, oh, check this out, you know, it's a draft, and you're just like,
that's amazing.
Like, we could just use that right now.
Keep going with that. You know, they were amazing with that sort of stuff. You know, and the thing is, when you edit, you typically will use, like, you know, I try my hardest not to, because I know it's the bane of every sound designer's and sound and composers. It's the bane of their existence, is using temp music, because they always go, well, you're going to use, like, you know, people go, you're going to use Danny Elfman temp music. Well, that sounds amazing. You know, like, it's, and if, a lot of directors can get stuck in that, in feeling that, well, I'm never going to get something as good. We would use, like, bits of temp music, and then the music they would supply would be so much better. And I was like, oh, this brings it out even more. It was never a thing of like, oh, I hope they can give me something that's even half as good as the temp music. It was always better and stronger, and would suit the visual aesthetic. It was just brilliant with those guys. Yeah.
So did they have a film to score to, or did you just give them a vibe of what the scene was going to be and say, look, it's going to be about this long, we need music that fits this?
Pretty much. That's how it would go. Because the thing that's amazing about Jesse, who's the screenwriter, is he lives up in the Sunshine Coast. We've worked with him on everything. So we made a movie a few years back on Mondo Yakuza that he did that almost had like a spaghetti western sort of sounding score. We knew he was capable of doing a lot of, you know,
genres.
He can handle it all. So, yeah, well, you know, you start telling him, oh, you know, think about Lucio Fulci, think about Dario Argento.
Goblin.
And the Goblin scores and stuff. And he knows exactly where you're going with that. So, yeah, a lot of the time it would be, you know, I just wanted to give those guys as much freedom as possible. And they would send us music while we were, like, shooting the film. So I would hear things, go, oh, listen to how cool this is. And that would start to give you ideas of how stylistically we could go. So a lot of their stuff fed into the actual making of the film.
Yeah, and I think also rhythmically too, like Addison edits as well, and I handle some post-production too. So we have a lot of like foresight for when we're shooting and on set, and in terms of getting sound while we're shooting, it's like we know now what kind of rhythm that we're needing and what things that now we might need to introduce with this style that now this is introduced. So, yeah, it's really interesting to kind of see, like, live editing in our brains kind of...
Yeah, as we're shooting.
As we're shooting.
Yeah, we're always thinking of the edit. And Jesse and Jacob just delivered some really unbelievably layered and, yeah, it was a very... I'm really looking forward to hearing how people feel about that soundtrack, because... Mm. From the people that have viewed it, I haven't had anybody see the movie yet who hasn't said, and that soundtrack is amazing. And it's like, I think it really is. So that's, again, why I really encourage people not to watch it on their phone and to watch it with as loud a sound as you can, because it sounds great. So,
yeah, definitely. So you filmed this kind of during a lockdown-ish period. Is that right? Yeah.
It was right in between. Like we literally went up to, because we filmed it about 3 hours from Melbourne. Yeah. The bulk of the film, there's obviously a bunch of stuff shot in Melbourne, but we shot for like 8 days up in Stawell, so about 3 hours out of Melbourne. And
we were fortunate enough to have just like a completely enclosed location that was ours the entire time.
But we also weren't in lockdown at that point. No. When we shot it, we got right in the sweet spot of like,
as soon as masks were a bit flexible, that's when we went straight and did it.
And then any other sort of pickup day shots, it was, we got it in that sweet spot. So really lucky. Because we start thinking about, you know, if we were halfway through it with what's going on now, like right now we wouldn't be comfortable shooting anything.
Yeah.
And we were fortunately in a position where things were open back up by the time we shot. So, yeah.
We had to work real quick and get it done.
Yeah.
I can imagine. Yeah. Yeah. So as indie filmmakers as well, is it like, does the indie landscape or the feeling of being an indie filmmaker kind of prepare you for that kind of environment of basically having to pivot on the go?
Yeah, I think that was a massive advantage. You know, you looked at the time, a lot of big budget films were not
shooting and were shutting down.
Yeah.
You know, people were getting, you know, 4 or 5 days into their shoot and shutting down because the crew's too big. We come from a, like, I mean, and the thing about it is, like, for us, this is the biggest crew we've ever worked with. So we felt like it was huge. But, you know, because we really are used to having, you know, basically no one with you. And this one had a crew.
Yeah.
So for us, it was a huge jump up. Like, but yeah, I think having that background of sort of doing a lot of the things yourself was, it's a fortunate place to be now. Yeah.
And like, we were really lucky to have everyone in our crew, you know, wearing multiple hats, like everyone was on the same page and, you know, really happy to be able to make something in this time. So there were a lot of things that in many ways we were kind of used to already battling kind of an uphill battle.
Even without coronavirus. Without.
So it was, you know, besides, you know, the COVID protocols, it was like, you know, new challenge. Let's get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a really great film and you both have, you know, something really to be proud of. I hope that because
thank you.
You know, as you mentioned, Australia doesn't really do slashers or giallo films all that often. So I know that you kind of, Addison, you kind of skip between genres in a lot of different ways. But I kind of want to see more slasher films. So
I'll tell you right now, this is that making My Cherry Pie has been the most fun and rewarding project we've ever been involved with. So I totally agree. I mean, to be completely honest with you, I'd love to make a sequel to My Cherry Pie. Me and Jasmine have had actual discussions. Actual discussions have gone into the idea of making an Australian disco slasher. So we've got a lot of things that we want to do. You know, can we do something like Prom Night? Something in a high school that's like a disco. How about that? And I was like, oh, you could have a disco ball killer head. That would be cool. And it's like, it's so silly. It's just, it's just opening up that imagination because, yeah, I mean, like you said, Australia, it's just in the current climate we're in, we're just not making movies like that. It's just not really getting done. Yeah. So you need someone to come along and do that.
Yeah.
Stuff, you know?
And I think like, you know, in the current climate as well, in terms of audience, you know, you want to see something that's a bit just fun and exciting and takes your mind off of everything that's going on right now. So you don't really want to settle into something that's like a total hard drama. You know, I want to watch something really silly and fun. And, you know, that's what relaxes me. And I know that there's people out there that are like me that want to watch movies like this.
Yeah, that's like a sort of form of escapism.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like there's, you know, for me, it's there's room for all of that stuff, and I just don't feel like we're getting enough on the other end of that. You know, like I love watching a drama that sucks me and it makes me feel the story and feel those emotions. And I also like watching, you know, Halloween 4, you know, and Friday the 13th Part 6, and movies like, I love watching movies like that and just chucking them on and having a good time.
Yeah,
and I just feel like, you know, Australia could do with a movie like that every now and then, you know, like it's not the worst thing to do that. So,
I completely agree. Well, I love Australian films. That's my focus for the website. And, you know, looking at the films that are up for the Actor Awards this year, I'm like, there's kind of this, they're all pretty good, but there's this kind of samey vibe to them that it's a drama or it's, you know, it's whatever. And it's like, okay, I want something like My Cherry Pie to kind of cut through the mix and be like, look at this, watch this and have a good time.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it did. So yeah, congratulations to you both.
Thank you. No, that really means a lot to hear that.
Yeah, definitely.
For us still, that's the thing is that because it's the virtual festival as well, it's like everything we're learning about people seeing the film is all just from home and like with emails. Like normally, like when we're playing at a festival where it's we're there, but you can feel the vibe of it.
You can read the room.
This is a really strange new place to be, but I'm excited about it. I actually think it's an exciting, you know, especially for someone that deals with anxiety, it's an exciting, I don't have to be like, I'm not face-to-face with people that are like hating the movie. You know, like that's going to be nice to like anyone who hates it can just hate it on their own. You know, like, I don't need to hear about it.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen. I think the people are going to watch and have a good time. Yeah.
Of course, I go straight to the most pessimistic outlook of it.
That's what anxiety does. That's what anxiety does. It leads you straight there. But I know what that's like. And you've made something good. So congratulations to you both.
Awesome. No, I really appreciate that. Really, really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we'll wrap up the interview there. But I think that this is going to be good, and I'm really excited. I haven't caught all of the films that are going to be at the festival, but I'm excited to see what else is screening.
Yeah.
Same. Yeah, that's it. I mean, I've got so much time. I want to watch everything. Yeah. So the one film I did want to give a shout out to, though, that I've just had some Twitter response with them, but their film looks amazing, is the documentary The Brilliant Terror. The Brilliant Terror, about grassroots genre filmmaking in the States.
Ooh.
Those guys are awesome, and their film looks amazing. So all of them look great, but that's the one I'm really, really excited to watch. Yeah,
yeah.
That's going to be really good.
Has there been anything kind of new or exciting that you guys have discovered while you've been locked down?
Well, like everyone, and this happened yesterday, and yeah, this is a broken record, but we finally watched Squid Game on Netflix, and it's unbelievably cool. We thought that was really great. Although, if I'm being totally honest, I did really, really like it. I just didn't. There was one element of it that I didn't appreciate, and I don't know if I want to spoil it, but
go ahead. Everybody's seen it.
the VIPs were a little bit over the top for me.
Yeah.
The American characters.
I was more interested in everything
else. As soon as they come in, I was like, oh, go back. The Korean actors are way better, and like their story is way better. So that was the only thing. But I did think the show overall was amazing.
Yeah.
James Gunn's, it came out a little while ago, but James Gunn's Suicide Squad, for a big popcorn release, I thought was really good. What else have we seen?
TV shows, Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso, the TV series, is amazing.
That's pretty good.
Great. It's really sweet. Makes that was a great thing to watch in lockdown, you know, where life's feeling fairly bleak, and then you can watch a show where it's so lovely and optimistic. That was a thing that was great.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I am so excited for, that obviously I haven't seen it yet, but I'm so excited for Halloween Kills.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to see that. I mean, I know everyone's whinged about the trailer giving away too much, but for me, it's just like I love Michael Myers, and I just want to see that character. So I'm very excited for that.
The shame about the cinema experience.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to watch that on Peacock or whatever it is, but whatever.
Yeah. So I hope it all goes a bit, it's so hard. Like, I'm here in Perth, so I say this all the time when I interview people who are over in Sydney and Melbourne, and less so Sydney now, but it's like, I've got no idea what it's like for you guys, but my heart goes out to everybody.
That's it. You'll be able to go to see Halloween at the theatre, won't you?
Yeah. Which is like, it's a bit crazy. Like, I went and watched all the President's Men last night, and I was just like, which was fantastic. First time seeing that, and that was brilliant.
But you
sit there, and every time I go and see a movie, especially go and see press screenings, I'm just like, I feel very fortunate. It is a very, I do. But it's something I don't take for granted, because I know so many of the Eastern States folks have just not had that pleasure.
And the that's the thing, is you go back to 2019 and no one ever would have thought of that. Like, and that's the thing that annoys me, is that I feel like I took it for granted for years and would be like, oh yeah, I'll go see that, and then just not seeing it and eventually seeing something. It's like, as soon as we get back to normal, I'm seeing everything at the theater, because it's like, I miss that so much. I didn't realize how much I would miss it until you don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, oh my god. Like, I think the last thing we saw at the theater, the last thing we saw was a drive-in. We went to the drive-in theater to see Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah.
That's the last thing I've seen at a big screen. So it's like, come on, man. Like, I need to see, especially when, there are things like Halloween Kills. I didn't get to see Suicide Squad at a big screen. There were things that, like, I would have loved to have seen that stuff. So it's as soon as we get back to normal, I never want to take that for granted again.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. Well, again, I hope it happens soon for you all. And
I'll look, it will. I'm sure it will. We're both vaxxed, so we're confident that things will get okay again. As long as Yeah, as long as everyone just behaves.
Exactly, exactly. The alternative is you could always just set up a pop-up screen at the horse races or something like that. That's a good one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Get a football team to play on the MCG and set up a screen over here. Yeah. You can have 100,000 people there. Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. I don't understand why they're doing that. But anyway, it's, again, I hope the cinemas open up and all this kind of stuff. But thank you guys for this. I really appreciate it. I'm going to...
taking the time with us.
Yeah, of course. As soon as I saw it come up, I was like, I need to chat to these guys. Yeah, it'd be fantastic. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. No, that was great. We had a really good time.
Yeah. Thank you. There we are. Addison Heath and Jasmine Jacoupi talking about their film, My Cherry Pie, which is going to be screening at the A Night of Horror International Film Festival. And if you want to find out more details, head over to anightofhorror.com and you can find all the details there. I tell you what, I mean, these online festivals are really fantastic and there is a heck of a lot of really great films that are screening there. And of course, so you heard both Addison and Jasmine recommend some of those films. I know that there is a few that I'm really keen on checking out, and it's effectively the short films as well, both the Australian shorts and the international shorts are ones that I'm really keen on checking out as well. So, you know, definitely a few other things. Chris Sun has a new film called The Possessed, which is going to be screening there as well. So, you know, it's fantastic. Really, really very affordable as well, which is great to see. Again, anightofhorror.com. Highly recommend checking out some horror content this October, this horror season. Thanks for listening, guys. I really hope you enjoyed this interview. I enjoyed bringing it to you. I have a couple more really exciting interviews coming up over the next week as well, so make sure to keep your eyes tuned or ears tuned to thecurb.com.au for those. And also for people who have been tuning in to watch New Gold Mountain, which literally just dropped on SBS On Demand and SBS Today, 13th of October, recording this intro and outro on a very apt day, the 13th. you can read a great review or interview, rather, I did with the director, Corey Chen, who is a lovely person to chat to, and it's a really fantastic series that I highly recommend people watch. You know, and certainly as I mentioned in the interview just then, I've done with Addison and Jasmine, talking about genre films and TV in Australia. We don't kind of make enough of them. I love a lot of the films that have already been made here in Australia, and this year we've made a lot of great stuff, but it does kind of skew towards the drama quite a little bit. And, you know, that is my wheelhouse. That's my favourite kind of genre. I love that kind of stuff. But on the same hand, I am kind of keen to see a little bit more genre fare, and that's what My Cherry Pie is, and that's what A Night of Horror delivers. And in a way, it's also what New Gold Mountain is. It's genre, it's revisionist western. So please seek these out, guys, check them out and make sure to watch them. Alright, that is the sound of my dog barking in the background there saying, wrap up. People don't need to hear this anymore. They want to go and buy tickets to A Night of Horror. Nightofhorror.com. Also, head over to patreon.com/thecurbau. As little as a dollar helps keep this website nice and independent. All right, guys. Take care of each other. See you on the next one.